Welcome back to Don't Call It a Book Club. My name is Luke.
The name's Dan.
Today we have finished book two of Dungeon Crawler Carl. Carl's Doomsday scenario again.
Now we know what that means.
Now we know. We know about the Doomsday and the scenario. Dan, I've got to get us warmed up.
Okay.
I'm going to say something that's going to start out really small, but I think it's going to extend outside of the immediate thing that I'm going to talk about. And that is, I'm always amazed. Well, okay. I think that we have a universal understanding that boxed brownies are good enough. You know what I mean by this?
Ooh, yes. I do know what you mean.
Where I think there's a lot of store-bought things that people want to, that like will do, but then they'll be like, if I want a better version of that,
make it from scratch.
I will make it from scratch.
Yeah.
I have like maybe had made from scratch brownies before.
Yeah.
But I feel like everyone, correct me if I'm wrong, is just like, yeah, boxed brownies.
No, 100%. Everyone agrees with you.
Like, you can't beat a boxed brownie.
Everyone agrees with you. And I think this is so important, too, because it's different from a lot of other boxed, even boxed baked goods, because people will still make a cake from scratch when you can buy a boxed cake. But it's rare when I've heard of somebody making brownies from scratch.
It's like we don't even have the concept of it.
Wait, whoa. Luke, do you think brownies even existed before the box? Like, do you think that it was...
No.
You think Betty Crocker came out with this box of stuff and they're like, what do we call this? And they're like, I don't know, brownies? They're like, okay, yeah, bet.
Well, because like cookies, for example, don't get me wrong, I love a store-bought cookie dough.
Yeah.
But like people are making cookies from scratch and I support that as well.
Yeah.
Box brownies, it's like, why would you even... What's the point of doing anything other than box brownies? How could you improve it?
Now, Luke.
Because that's a blondie. If you're trying to change it up, you're going blondie.
No, Luke, a blondie is when you do cookie mix, but turn it into a brownie shape.
Yeah, I know. I'm saying that you would never make brownies, but if you want to change it, you're like, if you want to do it from scratch, you're like, I'm going to, actually, do people do blondies from scratch? No, brownies. We've finished brownies, I think.
You're saying we've reached peak brownie and we've perfected it. So why would you ever try and make it from scratch?
Yeah.
Luke,
yeah.
I do have to say here that if we've never had a scratch brownie before, like if in all our lives, the only thing we've had is a boxed brownie, are we really the ones who can comment on this?
This is a good question. I will say, I have had like brownies from like a bakery or a restaurant before. And honestly, not better.
Luke, this is posing an important question, which is maybe they're just making it from the box.
Maybe no one has ever made from scratch brownies.
Maybe the reason why we don't know any better is we have never encountered it before. No one's even dared to dream of a brownie made from flour and sugar and cocoa powder, some oil, maybe a couple of eggs. Luke, you've inspired me. This week, I'm going to do a double blind taste test.
Okay.
I'm doing it.
Yeah. Okay. I'm excited to hear that.
You're not going to join me, Luke? You're not going to do it too? You're not committing to this with me right now?
Why
to science?
No. I want to hear your results before I do mine.
Fair enough. You can confirm my results then.
Yeah. Well, if you say that the scratch is better, then I'll try it. But if you say box is better, I'm going to be like, okay, cool.
Okay. Good.
My one thing, but one of the ones that I did that was like, I tried to make something from scratch that I was like, why did I do this? Is I made, hear me out, marshmallows from scratch.
Okay, yeah.
One time.
Yeah.
Tons of work.
Absolutely.
Very difficult. Very sticky.
Yep.
Not better than the store-bought.
Not worth it at all. I agree with you 100%.
Not worth it at all, unless, and I didn't do this, but I would if I did it in the future, you want to like do some flavor or something like that. You want to put in like some like strawberry or something.
Luke, I am
strawberry marshmallows.
I am going to spoil this for you. Unless you really love marshmallows, even the flavored ones, I don't think are that good.
Okay.
Because my mom,
yeah, I'm
mom, if you're listening, I love you very much. My mom makes flavored marshmallows at Christmas every year. I tend to just avoid them because I'm like, not my
brutal.
Favorite.
Brutal. I like a marshmallow, but I did when I made from scratch ones. It was like, this is a lot of marshmallows, and then I made homemade
hot cocoa.
Like everything from scratch, obviously. No. Rice Krispie treats.
Ooh.
With homemade...
Wait. You puffed the rice?
Well, I did not make the Rice Krispies,
okay,
to be clear, but I had the marshmallows that I had made.
Okay, fair
and
enough.
And I was like, well, these are like Rice Krispie treats.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things out there that it's like, I'm just going to buy the store-bought version of this.
Yeah.
It's like when people have the recipes, they're like imitation of like... a certain sauce or something.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I'll probably just buy the sauce.
Yeah, it's like $2. I think I'll just buy it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't really care that it's made with 90% corn. Like, I don't care that they just turned corn into all these different things to make the sauce. Like, I'll eat it.
Right. The farmers have got to sell their corn.
Yeah, they've got to sell it to somebody.
Find a way to make it out of soybeans these days.
Yeah, they're practically giving those things away.
Anyway, Dan, if you do brownies, I'm excited to hear about it.
Yeah, that'll be my project for the week.
What are you just doing, like regular fudge brownies?
Yeah, I mean, Luke, come on. If I'm doing this scientifically, they need to be a one-to-one comparison, okay?
Right, but I mean, there's a lot, like some of the things have like chocolate chips in them, and some of them are just like, I don't know what the deal is between brownies versus fudge brownies, to be honest, but a lot of them say that.
Yeah.
And I like them all.
Luke's confused.
So it's great.
Okay, good. Well,
it's like, which one should I pick? Well, they're all good, so.
Well, I'm going to try and have as good of a double-blind experiment as I can get this week.
Okay.
If the pod comes out late, you know why. It's because Dan was busy making brownies for 2 days because apparently, like, maybe that's how long it takes to make them from scratch. You've got to do a long proof for the brownies.
Of course, everybody knows that.
Uh-huh.
You've got to rise for days.
Yep. So, I'll do my best. And Luke, I'll try to even bring some on the pod to show you, just a visual comparison.
Okay.
If I can. Maybe I'll do it. Ooh, Luke, is this going to be a live tasting on the pod?
We can try to make it a live.
You'll have to time it correctly
because I feel like you might want them to both to be a little warm.
Okay, Luke, you're right. And I got to get some milk.
I was just going to say, God, that sounds good right now. Okay, I'm going to get some boxed brownies for this.
Okay, next week, Dan's doing a live tasting of a scratch made and a store-bought brownie live on pod. Is there a particular brand?
Exciting.
You know what? No. We're not going to be sponsored. Unless we get a sponsorship for this in the next week, I'm not telling what brand we're using for this.
Yeah, yeah.
Get smart. At us, brownie companies. We'll tweet at them or something.
Yeah, we'll tweet at them for sure. okay, that's very exciting. God, now I want brownies and milk. Okay, let's talk book. So we've finished the book.
Yeah.
Only two parts.
Yeah.
For this one. Let's see. What do we have first?
I got to start with a small thing here. And that is, so we started this section with our intrepid heroes entering the Desperado Club.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point they go to the Silk Road.
Yes.
In the Silk Road, there is a hobgoblin, I think, who is selling explosives.
The really ugly, crazy lady.
Yeah, and this is what I got to tell you. I got to talk to you about. Donut is talking shit out loud about this person. And the joke is that they hear them.
Mm-hmm.
Donut has a Riz level that's off the charts, right?
Right.
Donut, talk shit in chat, not out loud. You don't talk shit out loud. You have a special private chat with your best friend, Carl. That's where you talk shit.
Right.
What? Come on. I feel like there's a component of charisma that is intelligence, right? There's a component of charisma that's like, you don't
like
say,
social intelligence.
Yeah, you don't say shit that causes you to put your foot all the way down your throat.
Right. Well, okay, this is an interesting question, actually. Do points in charisma, for example, mm-hmm. actually affect like your thought process on what to say? Or is it just like when you say something, people are more receptive?
This is actually a great point. And I think it has to be the second option.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first option is intelligence.
Right.
And so it has to be that
even, does this have an intelligence stat? I think
it does. And Donut has intelligence.
Right. But I think also that is more like, it's like a video game, right? Where intelligence affects like your mana points or something like that. It doesn't actually affect your, what we think of as your intelligence.
Yeah. It does like a little bit, but not in a major way. Yeah. I don't think so.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it does not actually change her social skills in a vacuum.
I just feel like the first time it happened where you were pretty far away and you talked shit and she called you on it, you have to be like, oh, I gotta remember to do that in the chat next time.
or counter, her charisma is so high that it has now turned it into a little fun game, a little fun inside joke between the two of them.
It's charming, you're saying.
Yeah.
You're saying when she comments about how ugly that hobgoblin's face is and how disgusting it is, it's like a fun little game that they play with each other.
That's right. That's right. Because she, yeah. I think so.
Okay. Sure. Why not?
Okay. Also in the Desperado Club.
Yep.
They meet up with an old friend of Mordecai's.
Mm-hmm.
Who is a djinn.
Yes.
Or as Mordecai says, a genie.
Yes.
Now, when Mordecai calls him a genie, this guy gets a little bit annoyed. He's like, that's actually not a good term for us. We prefer djinn. Something along those lines.
Yeah.
Now, I find this interesting because we also learn that this guy was a previous crawler. And so changed races to become a djinn.
Yeah.
Do you find it interesting that, like, well, okay, can you be racist against people who have, like, fully changed races?
Ooh.
In this way? Like,
are you saying, wait, hold on, Luke, because I want to make sure I understand what you're saying. Are you asking if you can be racist against somebody for what their previous race was? Or are you saying, can you be racist against somebody for just having changed races at all?
No, I'm saying, like, because I feel like racism is usually about, like, ingrained, like what people think is, like, an ingrained trait of a race.
Yes, yes, yes.
And what we should say is incorrect.
Very good. It's not that kind of podcast, folks.
It's not that we're not, that's right. We're anti-racism here.
Yeah.
You'll be shocked to hear.
Yeah.
Now, if someone changes race,
uh-huh.
by that, you can't really be racist against them for their new race, right?
Well, okay, Luke, because here we need to make a distinction between what I'm calling racists and super racists. Okay.
Okay. Good. Yes.
Because I think if you're just a racist, whatever their current presentation of race is, you're racist against that one, right?
Okay.
So you're assuming that they've inherited the negative traits of that race that they have turned into.
Okay.
Now, if you're super racist, you're picking either one and you're saying whether or not, like, your starting race you could be racist against that one, even if they've changed since then. Or you could also be racist against the current one, because you're basically saying they're going to take the worst of either of those two.
Okay.
And that's a super racist we've just invented. So nobody's allowed to use it because we just invented it. So sorry, trademark.
That's right. This is, and it's going to be a very, it's a, you know, very relevant term.
Yeah. Is that what you're, is that what you're saying though, Luke? You can't be like, maybe I'm misunderstanding you.
I'm trying to figure out because like, well, okay. Also from the person receiving the racist comment.
Yeah.
For example, like this, well, so this is more of just using the wrong, like a derogatory term, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just, it's just interesting to think about, I think, like, cause this guy gets offended about a term that he's not, that he is now, but it's not all, I don't know. It's confusing.
It is confusing. I will also say this is why a lot of D&D has strayed away from using the word race to talk about literal different species. Because in the way this book describes race, they literally have different stats. Like the different races are like, you're very ugly and have low intelligence, but are good at making bombs. And it's like actually you have innate traits as part of your race. So like in this universe, now don't clip this, but racism seems to be warranted to a certain degree where it's like all of the creatures of this type have these characteristics or have similar characteristics.
Right. It's, I mean, you're right by calling it, it's a species. It's like, yeah.
Which I,
calling,
I will,
it a, calling it a race is kind of the wrong term.
Correct. Correct. So I think, now, it is the term that we use for like D&D and stuff, so I get it. But really, these are different species because they're not interbreeding. I'll tell you that.
Sure. Okay.
At least from what we've seen.
Except for like elves and everyone else.
Right, right. Just elves and everyone else.
Elves love to do this. Which actually is my next note.
Yeah.
Related. So good transition here.
Mm-hmm.
The elves have, and I think Carl mentions this, we've created kind of an interesting solution to the problem of elves living forever but still having children.
Yes.
Which is, at least they say, that in this world, the high elves are big on just banishing and like genociding all other like
subspecies of elves. Yeah.
Which is an interesting solution to the quote unquote problem. Whereas like Aragorn, for example, the book Aragorn.
Yeah.
It's like the elves can only reproduce once every like very rarely.
Yeah.
And so it keeps the numbers reasonable.
Right. Right. It is an interesting solution, Luke. I do like what it does to the image of elves as like this noble sort of better than everyone else race. And it really turns them into just like freaks.
Yeah.
Which is fun. And the elves that we see in this chapter, like the city elves are very derpy and I really like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also to get back to our previous discussion, sort of justifies racism in a way that's problematic.
The dumb elves, especially. Yeah.
Yeah. The city elves. It's like, yeah, maybe you should be kind of racist against them. I don't like that.
Right. It's different from our world.
Yes. Obviously,
to be clear, it's weird. It's weird.
Yeah,
it creates a very difficult society to live in, I imagine.
Yeah, something about this book, I think, is doing a lot to create a very difficult society to live in. Like most of this book, actually, is doing that.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I, Luke, I have a bit of a technical question for you.
Okay.
At one point, when it's actually when Carl first encounters the city elves and he kicks one in the nuts as Donut blasts its head off.
Mm-hmm.
Their manager, Mordecai, I think it's Mordecai, or it's their like PR person. Zev. I think it might be Zev, actually. He says that it's not proper form to kick somebody in the nuts, and a few of their like followers were grumbling about it.
Yeah.
So, Luke, let me just give you some numbers here because I wrote these down. Carl has 72 trillion followers. What does it mean that a few were grumbling about him kicking someone in the nuts? Because I need to know, like, in this context, does a few literally mean like four? Because if that's the case, why are you even telling me about that?
It can't be. That's not detectable.
Right. That's in the noise of data coming through. That's like not even real content. And then, Luke, this 72 trillion followers, there are religious sects being created about this. Like, there are different denominations of followers of this person, right? There's like the Baptists and the press, like there's enough people to form their own like cults around some moment.
I mean there's like so many people that, well, this actually is less of a how many like numbers game, but like people that are a fan of Carl, let's say, are fans of him for probably a lot of different reasons.
Yes.
And there are probably like, if we consider fanhood of Carl fanhood,
yeah,
a faction, there's like intra-faction disputes for sure.
100%. This is what I'm getting at. It's so big. A few can't be a few people. It has to be a few of his like larger factions within it. Because you know there's the faction that's like foot freaks. And then there's a faction that's like never give him pants. And then there's a like... there's a faction that loves that he has a cat and is just posting cat memes all the time. And there's just like all these factions within it. It's not, you're never actually interacting with a single follower. You're interacting with the distilled content of one of these faction factories that's coming out. That's like, oh, this faction actually doesn't like this thing that you were doing.
Right. Right. I mean, my thing is that like, how difficult is it to monitor the communication of what people are saying?
The number of moderators you have to have in this chat room is like the size of Earth's current population.
I mean, the problem is it gets super AI-y.
Oh yeah. I think so. True.
And so you're relying on a bunch of AIs to tell you what all the fans are saying.
Yeah,
and
to summarize like the bots, information.
It's a mess. because you also have trolls in there.
Oh, 100%.
That are like trying to disrupt the fanhood of Carl, who are like coming in and being like, oh, Carl shouldn't have kicked him in the nuts. That was bad.
Yeah.
And then to get people to dislike Carl and then like one of whoever they support or something like that.
Right.
So it's a tough, Zev has a tough job. I'll say that.
That's
kind of, I don't really know like what, like I guess her job is really just to book them on things. And then her commentary on like what the fans are saying is kind of irrelevant.
I'd say not a tough job at all. She just has to be like, that was good or that was not good. Don't do that.
I feel like at a certain level, that was good, that was not good has to be more of a vibes thing that she picks up on rather than like actually analyzing the current conversation around it.
100%. When she says a few, she's like imagining a few out of like a room of 100. She's got a room of 100 of his followers that are all the most important sects in her head.
I like that you've gone with the term sects.
Yeah.
As like a religious thing.
I mean, it has to be like that in a certain way, right?
It does. Because I don't disagree.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
It's chaos out there.
Yeah.
Man. And there's just like, there's so many. Well, I guess Carl and Donut are like are like the highest.
Yeah, they're in the top 10.
Yeah.
And if you think about Luke, if you think about the level of content that they're putting out, it feels to me like they have to be some of the most watched among this group. Because think about, like, there was an assassination attempt on them outside of the game. Like, there's no way other players had, like, foreign governments trying to kill them. And, like, they got the, like, prince of a foreign government killed and, like, I don't know. It feels like they're actually making some big moves here that even if they're not the best dungeon crawler, they're the most interesting in the world.
Well, they are clearly the most compelling.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, there's like I can see, like honestly, the number one, the young girl is also like fairly compelling. And then the lady with the goats is up there. But then everyone else is like not on the same level in terms of like interesting content that I think they're putting out.
Yeah.
Even what's her name? The lady,
the Shield Maiden.
Yeah, the Shield Maiden.
Yeah.
Like I like she's probably really cool and strong and stuff like that, but in terms of like compelling,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Show me this goat lady. Actually,
I actually do love that storyline. Yeah, I mean we have to encounter her, Luke. Also, God. Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that a little bit later, I guess. But yeah, definitely want to see this goat lady. A lot of interesting teasers at the end of this section, of like the one of the old ladies in his old crew is now in the top 10 for some reason.
Yeah.
Intrigued.
Very intrigued. Yes. And it's interesting how there's not like, we don't know how they do these rankings.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a mix of level, popularity, and I don't know, a bunch of other things.
Yeah.
More power rankings.
Yeah,
which I'm into.
Exactly. Not an ELO system.
I like
system.
A subjective ranking.
Yeah. Yeah. They're creating a tier list is really what they're doing.
But I do want to actually talk a little bit more about other crawlers and the manager system.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or
the guide, the gamer guide system.
The guide system. Yes. Because we've heard a few times about people with managers that don't seem to be particularly good, or at least
we
like
should say guides,
not,
because Mordecai is a manager, which is different than a guide.
Right. Correct. And Mordecai so far has been a very good guide and manager.
Well,
I think
when he's not blackout. Yes.
Sure. Yes. But in comparison, we've like Katia's guide we learn about,
yeah,
who suggested she be the doppelganger class or whatever. And we've heard about other people who have had like really bad recommendations from their guide. And I'm just curious what's going on with that. Like, is the guide just like screwing around? Or is there an incentive there?
Carl seems to think that the guides are just screwing around. Carl's justification for this is that the guides must not like their job, and so they must just be trolling.
Right.
Because they're bored or angry at the system. And so they're just like lashing out.
I think that there's an argument for some of this.
Mm-hmm.
My take is the screwing around one.
Yeah.
But for a different reason.
Ooh, okay.
Because we do, like, there is an incentive to be a good manager. Right? As we've seen from a good guide.
Yeah.
Because as we've seen from Mordecai, I mean, he's been a guide for a while, I think. But in this case, if they get to level 4, he's like free or mm-hmm. something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they do have that kind of incentive to get your crawlers to go very far. However, it doesn't seem to be working super well.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say that some people kind of like being in the crawl.
You're saying, because, interesting. Go
because
on.
Because like as a guide, is it bad? It seems fine.
Well,
actually,
I don't know, Luke. I mean, you're not allowed to do what you want, really, right? You're kind of a slave, it feels like.
I mean, maybe on a technical level, yes, but in like a
Luke's getting down to technically slavery.
In the way that we think of slavery, I feel like no.
I mean, but they're like, they don't have any agency in what they're doing, right?
Like on a macro level, yes. I think that's true. Like they have to stay in the crawl.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. I guess if you like the crawl, now I get what you're going for here. What you're saying is they're screwing around because they don't want their crawlers to get to level 4.
Well, I don't even know if it's necessarily that they actively want to stay in the crawl. It's more like this is fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because Mordecai, at least I'll keep using Hisman as an example,
yeah.
talks about how they've been on Earth for a long time.
Yes.
Because they have to like learn the culture.
Yeah.
And so like let's just take a look at Mordecai's like life in recent years.
Yeah.
Which has been to go to Earth and basically like watch a bunch of TV and like consume a bunch of content. And then when the crawl starts, he's guiding them, but also kind of just like going to bars and hanging out. And like I will acknowledge that like it's not like a phenomenal life,
uh-huh.
for sure.
Uh-huh.
But it's not like terrible. You know what I mean? It's not like he's like factory working in the 1800s.
Or now.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, Luke, this is fair, but I also wonder, we've talked about how amazing outside the crawl has to be, right? Well, theoretically,
yes.
Could be.
Could be.
I mean, maybe the outside the crawl is way cooler than this, though.
Maybe.
You know? Yeah. Maybe outside the crawl, everybody's, like, hoverboarding everywhere and is, like, I don't know, just having a great
ordering large cheese pizzas in a limo.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, I take your point. It does seem like Mordecai actually has a fair amount of agency and like seems to be chilling a lot of the time, but they do pop him around all over the place. Like he could be interrupted in any moment because he has to go do what his crawler is up to. And if your crawler doesn't like you, they could really fuck with you while you're there.
Sure.
And Luke, I get that. Like at one point, I think somebody says that Earth has like the best media that they've seen in a long time. So they're, going
this
to be
is true.
Potentially yeah. making a spinoff. So I'm sure that was great. But sometimes you're going to end up on a planet that is just so boring and you have to spend years like learning their boring ass culture.
Right.
That's got to suck.
Yeah. I think my main point is that being a guide or a manager is like fine.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Luke. I want to talk about game mechanics, if I can take us to game mechanics.
Okay, love that.
I am so excited that this game has so many bugs. Because I love the fact that Carl and Donut did this thing, and it caused 83 or 84 celestial boxes to get popped out, and the company running it was like, oh fuck, that's gonna bankrupt us. No, 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 no.
Right.
And it was just because they like didn't test it, they didn't test their game thoroughly, so they didn't account for this as a possibility of what could happen, especially considering that like this isn't that much of an edge case of something that could happen here.
Yeah,
because like the AI almost guided Carl to doing this with like picking up the box, and like it seemed like this is really much a possibility here.
Yeah,
and I love
again. I think like as much as I agree with Carl that the crawl is very unethical.
Yeah,
it is great content though.
It's so good.
Because, like, genuinely, a lot of stuff can happen.
Yeah.
It's not like a video game where, like, there are really hard bounds.
Yes. Yes.
And I know that that's, like, part of the allure of, like, Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah.
But even in D&D, like, there's still more limits than this.
Well, right, because in D&D the dungeon master can be like, okay, I get how the rules could let you do that, but for the sake of making the game playable, I can't let that happen.
Right.
Whereas in this, the like that's why it's so watchable, Luke. You're right, because if I'm watching this and I see what's happening, I'm like, oh shit, the Barant Corporation is gonna be dying right now. They're gonna be losing their minds with this, and it comes out of the game, and you're like, oh, this could bankrupt a whole system.
Yeah.
And that's
I am
amazing.
Curious how we seem to be coming at, like, having implications outside of the game very often.
Yeah.
And I'm curious how much of an aberration that is, mm-hmm. or if that's like happening in a lot of the crawls.
Right. Yeah, I don't know.
But either way, it's awesome. And then like that was a big what's the word, glitch or whatever?
Yeah.
Bug. But there's a lot of bugs that are small.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Just like every update, they're like, they have a list of bugs that they're fixing because like people's spells are working weird, or like there's some times where people just like use a spell and it messes up because their system is, and they die.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Which sucks for them, but again, phenomenal content.
Really good content, yeah. Oh man.
The bit about everyone going, them like being sick of everyone using the bathroom. And then they drop, if you use the bathroom outside of the bathroom, they drop a level whatever enemy on you.
Yeah. Really good. Really good
really
content.
Good.
Luke, speaking of content, I have a theory.
Okay.
Luke, we laid the foundation for this theory last episode when we talked about how there's a good chance Carl is already an NPC.
Yes.
I think there is more evidence for this now, and I've realized what the, sort of the side quest guiding character is in this mission.
Okay.
Donut is an AI that's pushing Carl to do his NPC quests, right? Let me lay this out for you, Luke.
Yeah.
Donut does a bunch of shit seemingly randomly, right? Jumps out of the window when the like first in the very first book to get Carl to go outside. Is like seems impulsive in choosing like little creatures and spells and stuff like that. And in this book is where it really clicked for me, because Carl is committed to not doing this silly quest with the prostitutes falling from the sky, right? Mm-hmm. Carl's like, no, we're going to stick to the plan. But Donut really pushes him to do it. In the end, right?
Yes. I mean, I will also say that the storyline and the AI in general also push them.
Yes, but Donut is the one who's also like, I can't believe you would let them not Like, we have to help them. We have to help them.
Uh-huh.
And sure. This quest line seems like it was actually way bigger and more important than it sounded like. Like, this quest line resulted in a nuke in their city.
Right.
So it wasn't just like a little side quest that they kept expecting it to be. This was a main event that they wanted to happen. And if Carl had just gone about his life, he would have just leveled up. He would have grinded, leveled up, and taken the stairs at the circus that he already found. Instead, he got pushed to do this insane finale sort of a moment. And I think if Donut wasn't there, that's not happening.
Right. It is interesting because, I mean, so we have talked about how Donut and Carl are like putting out more and better content than the other crawlers.
Yeah.
And that's part of why they have such a high view count.
Yeah.
It does feel like they've kind of been manipulated in some way into doing this.
Yeah.
I'm going to say they, and I realize that you're saying that.
I'm saying it's all.
Donut is the one doing it.
Yeah.
Which I love. Because, yeah. I mean, Mordecai tries to throw up a little explanation about how, like, because of the compressed timeline, the AI is compensating by giving them more and bigger quests. But it feels like just Carl is getting the bigger quests.
Right. The other guy did have part of that quest too, it sounded like.
True.
But it still feels like it was meant for Carl to do. Especially considering the like prostitute angle. Like the AI was really like, hey Carl, this is what you should do.
Right, yeah.
I think it's just too neat. The other thing about this, which is insane to me, is when Carl gets his little wicker basket throwy thing, it pops him back to a memory that just feels fake to me. Like, there keep being these memories he's having that feel fake. We talked about this last time with the tree. In this one, he's got this memory of throwing, like, cherry bombs off a ship into the Arctic ice. And it, like, links him back to this game that he remembers hearing about or playing.
Right.
Or, like,
High Life, which is awesome.
Yes, yes, very cool. But I'm just like, this feels contrived for this object that you have. Like, you were throwing cherry bombs into the ice on your Coast Guard job? Like, off of a icebreaker thing? How is that related again? Like, that's too... It's too closely related, I should say. Like, it's too perfect for your current position.
That one's kind of weird. I feel like it would make, you know those, I forget if he says this, but as a dog owner, I'm sure you're aware of these.
I have one.
Yeah, the throw the tennis balls and you can, it just gives your arm, makes your arm longer, essentially.
Yep.
That's what I would have expected them to like relate it to, because those are far more common.
Correct.
but again, his story is kind of random.
The story feels random, and it feels like, man, you got to be questioning this shit a little more, bud. And they're just...
Are you saying because that story specifically is random, or because he seems to continue to have like memories that connect to what's happening in the game?
That one. That he seems to keep having memories that connect to shit that's happening in the game that, like, feels more than a coincidence to me.
Right.
And they've already given us the little... They've already done the little literary thing where they're like, Donut's like, I don't want to be an NPC, Carl. It's like, that's just a little... That feels like foreshadowing, guys.
So you're even further into the Carlson NPC.
Yeah. I'm deep down the rabbit hole.
The problem is, okay, with this is that if you think Carl's an NPC and then that Donut is like another NPC or AI or whatever, who's the main character in this
It's a good question.
I think it's just a scripted TV
show. I think we're still trying to find it. And you know what, Luke? It might just be all scripted. I think we're still trying to find the main character.
Okay. Maybe it's Katya.
Could be. Or the talk show host.
Ooh. Ooh.
Right?
Okay. Okay. I like that. Or it's Mordecai, actually.
Okay.
Show about the manager. A manager show.
It's what's that show with the soccer team that everybody loved?
Ted Lasso. That it's one. Ted Lasso.
But with Mordecai.
But, that's right. And it's, well, it is funny, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. I actually do want to talk about Carr a little bit more.
Yeah.
Can we just discuss how weird Carl's... can we just discuss how weird Carl's build is? And if you're not familiar, if you're not a gamer, build is like what type of character and what skills and class he has.
Yes.
Basically.
Say more.
In the style of play. So Carl, well, let me say my build usually, if I'm doing one of these, you know, it's something normal. I like a big sword guy. Mm-hmm. Give me a big sword who swings it hard.
Yeah.
And that's my build.
I like stealth archer build. I like to sneak around.
Dan's a stealth archer because he was heavily influenced by Skyrim.
Yes.
Or something. Carl, on the other hand, is a punchy guy who also throws bombs and basically nothing else.
Yes.
I've never heard of one of those before.
I haven't.
And then
either.
like Donut, for example, is like a pretty pure like mage.
Yeah. Spellcaster, mage, yeah. Yeah.
Spellcaster. The lady that we hear about, God, why do I keep forgetting her name? The Shield Maiden.
Yeah.
She also feels pretty normal for like a video game.
Mm-hmm.
Carl is bizarre, right?
Carl is bizarre, and I think part of the reason Carl's bizarre is it feels like when you spec into punch guy, you spec into certain traits, right? When you spec into punch guy, you want to spec into like dex, maybe a little bit in constitution and strength because you're trying to punch shit, right?
Yeah.
Which feels...
Yeah. And kick, we should say.
And kick. A lot of kicking. But we want to spec into physical components, right?
Yeah.
If I'm doing explosion guy, now I'm specking into like intelligence, probably, because I need to figure out how to do these bombs. I'm specking into... I'm probably trying to spec a lot into constitution, honestly, because I want to survive an explosion.
Sure.
Carl is trying to get both of these working.
I feel like Carl also kind of has high charisma, doesn't he? I mean, not as high as Donut, but I feel like he mentions having like a weird amount of points in charisma.
You might be right. I don't remember that, but you might be right. This is a player who's not min-maxing, and if you want to win this game, you need to be min-maxing, I think.
Well, I'll push back.
Okay.
Because I agree with you in terms of the like mechanics of the game,
mm-hmm.
but you're forgetting about the social aspect of it.
Okay, fair enough.
And viewers, if I'm viewing, especially if I'm trying to reach a mainstream audience, I'm not min-maxing.
Okay,
min-maxing is like not great for.
That's true. You don't want your viewers to be watching and like I'm hitting like a sick combo on my min-max character that like summons a blood demon and then kills the blood demon and I get a 10 plus buff to all physical damage attacks for the next 10 seconds. And then everyone's like, what is he doing? I don't understand what the like.
Yeah, it's too complicated for the general audience.
This strategy is too complex. But yeah, Carl, it's just like, is he going to blow something up or is he going to kick it in the nuts?
Yeah, Carl, I think, has unintentionally or intentionally, maybe.
He's got broad appeal.
His build is for broad appeal, I think.
Yeah, yeah. This is the Walmart
punchy,
of the builds.
Punchy, funny guy with a goofy costume who blows stuff up.
Yes.
Basically. Yes. And comes up with intricate and weird plans.
Yeah, it's true.
Maybe that's how you win this game.
He seems to be doing
well. They keep talking about how important having high viewership is.
Yeah.
And I realize that at some point that's going to be true because they get like better sponsorship deals.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it hasn't been true yet.
I disagree with you, Luke, and here's why.
Ooh, okay.
Literally, the first half of this book, the only reason he's able to do this thing with the circus is because he has high viewership.
Mm, okay, true.
So I think he is leveraging it right now in the way that he needs to be.
I guess he has thought out of the box more than I think a lot of other people probably would.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, fair point.
Luke, I do have to talk about Carl, though, a little bit more.
Okay.
Because...
Big Carl said.
So Carl, one of his defining characteristics... Tell me about one of Carl's defining characteristics, Luke. The big one that seems to differentiate him from most other people in here.
He doesn't have any pants.
Okay, yeah. He also is trying to save people. He's like trying to be a good guy, right?
Okay, sure.
So this is one of Carl's big MOs here, is he's not trying to go murder hobo and kill everybody. He's trying to be kind of a good guy. This is also the guy who decides, you know, who really needs 5 more seconds to get away from a giant explosion? Like, Carl hands a detonator to Katya and is like, hey, in the last 5 seconds, you should hit this, and it's probably going to cause the explosion to happen quicker, but, like, if you haven't found safety at that point, you're probably not going to. And I'm like, sorry, hold on. What? What?
This is a funny argument that he makes on that one.
He's like, yeah. Look, if they're not safe already in the 5 seconds before the explosion is going to happen, then, like, they're never going to make it, so just blow it. We need the XP. sorry, Carl, you've never heard of like a last second save where people are like jumping behind a door at the very last possible moment?
Right. You know, there are some people who are like trying to like time it.
Yeah, that are doing the exact same thing you're doing.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Some people took a hit on this. I think.
Granted, like, it turned out when he did this, it changed the nature of the explosion, so it didn't kill everybody who was in the radius.
True.
But he didn't know that. He thought it was going to just cause it to go off. Carl! You have to sacrifice some XP if you're going to be like, no, we got to try and save everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot of XP, though, Dan.
He did level up quite a few times.
He did. I'm for it.
Wow.
I think.
Wow, okay, Luke.
You got to get that XP.
It's true. They did sacrifice a lot of grinding to do that quest.
Yeah. Man. It is like, I don't know. Do you think that you open this as Carl wanting to save people as a thing that differentiates him?
Maybe not differentiates him, but is like a key character trait.
Okay.
For
okay,
Carl.
Okay, sure. Yes, it is a key character trait. I was going to say, I feel like we've seen maybe not a ton of people that are like this, but I feel like there would be a good amount of people
that have
this character trait. Yeah. But
maybe that's why he gave
a lot of XP.
Yeah, a lot of XP. Maybe that's why he gave Katya the detonator too, because he could be like, "Well, if we do take out some folks in the blast, I don't want some of those skulls next to me, so Katya can take the hit. Katya can take the moral damage there."
Oh, I didn't think about that. Brutal.
Yeah, he's real calculating, Carl.
That's right. In a very sociopathic way, as we've seen,
mm-hmm,
for sure.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about Katya? We haven't really interacted with her too much. What do you think of the skill that she has?
Are you talking about the monster truck thing, or are you talking about the can run through walls, the sort of juggernaut ability?
No. Well, those are the same. I'm talking about the changing her face and that kind of thing. That needs to be skilled at it.
Honestly, didn't sound like there's any upside to that skill. because it sounds like you take, like, you have lower stats than any of the things you turn into. You're just changing aesthetically to look like,
right,
human. Like,
but Dan, you're forgetting about the mass aspect of it.
The what?
He says that you, when you put on something like a jacket, yeah, or whatever,
yeah,
that gets added to your total mass, and then you can still change.
You can manipulate
what you look like based on that.
That. Okay.
So you have however much mass you're wearing.
Does it become hard to move around at a certain point?
I don't know.
Because I would just find the biggest jacket I could find, right?
Yeah.
And then I could get cool wings or like.
Yeah. So I think there's some flexibility here. You can, I don't know. You can be a big boy too.
I will say, speaking of this, choosing your race, we did find Mordecai's friend, it sounds like, did the thing we talked about last time where he was half of one thing and half of another.
Yeah.
Instead of dragon and goat, he went with something else, but dragon and slug or whatever it was we were talking about last time.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is really the best option.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Luke, let's talk real quick, short reviews, because I imagine we're going to come back to this series. These books are super fun. Even when they're a little bit like corny, when it's a little cheesy with the like Carl being just too nice, it seems like they're very fun. They're written very well. These are great reads. I'm having a blast.
Yeah. Yeah. Since we're keeping it short again, I mean, I enjoy it. I don't have much more to add. Very fun, very funny. Again, the very creative, as I said, and I really appreciate that the author has actually made an effort to make the production of this, because this is like, right, the whole story of it is it's a TV show basically. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that. I genuinely think that it's good content.
Yeah.
Rather than it being like, how could anyone watch this?
Right.
I don't know if everyone agrees with that, but I think it's good content.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a good book.
Objectively, it is excellent content.
Okay. We both like it. We will probably be back almost certainly to the next book. But what do we got next week, Dan?
Next week, this is coming from a recommend from one of my buddies, IRL. Next week we're gonna be checking out the first half of The Tainted Cup by Robert Jackson Bennett. This was a Hugo winner this year.
Little murder mystery.
Mm-hmm. Fantasy murder mystery. Ooh. So I'm looking forward to it, Luke. I think we'll do the first half of this.
I think so.
So stay tuned. We'll be back next week, bringing the hot takes.
And being